Hi, my name is DeAndre, and I'm an alcoholic. And welcome to the meeting, everybody. I got here a little late. The traffic is horrible, and I had to go. I had to drive a lot to find, and then I got lost, and then I found my way, and then I got so excited about that I got lost again. So, I don't know if anybody can relate to that. Welcome to new people. It's good to be here with new people. I saw new people. New people are a necessity in order for Alcoholics Anonymous to work, and we're glad you're here. AA does not need a whole lot of time sober in order for it to work. New people started this shit, and it's good to be sober. My sobriety date is May the 29th, 1991. Which means I just took 16 years this past May, so I'm into my sweet 16th year of sobriety. Feel like a little virgin girl after a quinceañera. Sober 16 years. 16 years of sobriety. Wow. Amazing. And I remember when I couldn't stay sober for 16 minutes. After I would wake up in the morning. I grew up in Jordan Downs Housing Projects in Watts, not too far from here. And I loved living over there, man. I just loved the atmosphere of being able to be drunk all the time and nobody really give a shit about it. And my mother is the first person I ever seen enjoy alcohol. She made drinking look fun. And she would play card games all night with her friends. They would play Bidwiz and Spades, and we used to love, me and my brother and my sisters, we'd love like watching them, you know, and all of that. And then we would kind of be nervous about if people like us would show up. We liked when the normies would be there, because if the alcoholics would show up, then there wouldn't be any drinks left over after the card game. And we loved when the normies came by. Normies provide very, very safe drinking environments for folk like us, and that's what we did. We took advantage of the normal drinkers leaving all that booze behind, and we drank and cleaned up after those parties, man, and it was fun. And my mother would be passed out, and we would be just getting started, me and my brother and my sisters. And after some years passed, my siblings, they didn't drink as much and as often as I decided to drink for some reason. They always wanted to stop or not do it at all or had other plans. And for me, I just couldn't stop, you know. And then that's when I couldn't wait for the card games. I would be looking for the booze before my mother's friends would even get there, you know, because I wanted to get loaded. And I didn't have time to be waiting on nobody playing no goddamn cards. And that's how fast it progressed with me not even being a teenager yet. You know, I started drinking at a very young age. And it just really, you know, took a hold on me to a point where I just made it. And I made it, you know, the throwing up and all of that stuff and not being able to do school right and all that. I just adjusted myself around those dysfunctional aspects of drinking. There was not a problem for me to be late or to not go to school. There was no reason for me to worry about making certain appointments or engagements, because I need to get, stay, and be loaded, and I have to do research and development on that, on those issues, and I really don't have time to be responsible for all these real things that a lot of other people seem to be so excited about being attached to. Because I'm going to get loaded. And what happened is I just got out of control. And instead of enjoying it, you know, I felt that it was just necessary. You know, I had to be high. And just all the scrapes and the stories that go along with my drinking, I got too many of them, and I don't have enough time. But I'll tell you, I know I need to be here. Especially on days when I don't feel like being here. I'm a real alcoholic. I have fallen in love before AA. I have moved around and all of that, and I still have not been able to deal with the obsession to drink and use the way you men and women have done that for me. And I tried all the imaginable remedies that I could come up with. And that included, like, only getting loaded on Tuesdays and Fridays and stuff like that. Or only getting high at my brother's house, but staying sober when I would go to my mom's house. All of that stuff never worked for me. And what did work for me, however, is making sure that no matter what was going on in my life, the drinking had to be a part of it or I wasn't interested, you know. And I had to have a way to get to alcohol in order to function. I remember when I was in the California Conservation Corps when I was about 18 years old. And this is a little program where you go and, like, put out fires and build dams for floods and all this bullshit. And you're going to, you know, be a respectful member of society. And we would live at these different places throughout the state that the state owned, like at Camarillo State Hospital in Camarillo. We lived there, and our camp was in the back with the staff housing, and it was just sort of like Hotel California, like that song by the Eagles. And we would just get loaded and fry off that acid and run around in the back in those heels, and it was just wonderful, and I loved that. And that was a very exciting time for me. I enjoyed the insanity of running around loaded and having a good time, man. I enjoyed it. There were a couple of negative things that took place, but for the most part, I was fully involved in that lifestyle because it fed the obsession, and I was allowed to hook up with guys and gals that were using and getting loaded the same way I'd like to. And we lived back there, and I remember one night we were, and I know this is an AA meeting, and all of that, but it's not, my grand sponsor used to tell me a long time ago, it's not the chemical you take, it's the body you put it in that's all screwed up. And I remember just doing that acid, man, and running around back there and yelling and screaming and laughing our fucking asses off. And one of our friends fell down a hill and rolled down about the length of a football field and just rolled down the hill. And one girl was with us, and she was like, "Oh my God, what are we gonna do? He fell." And then three of us just started laughing our fucking asses. I thought that was the funniest motherfucking thing. And this is before, like, Jackass and all this bullshit, you know, YouTube and all. That was a live example of just some motherfucker just rolling down the hill. It was, I still laugh at that, you know, when I think about that. He fell his ass off, you know. He fell down that hill, and I laughed and laughed and laughed. And then I couldn't stop laughing, and we laughed all the way back to the dorm, and we got in trouble because we were loud because we kept laughing. And then it dawned on us the next morning, did he even get up? You know, the guy that fell down the hill. We didn't know. And he did make it back safe. But my point is that, you know, when I'm living like that, reality has no place in my mind for me. I don't want to know what's real. I don't care. And when I left that program or that place, I went back to Watts, and that's when my disease really progressed, because I got thrown out of that program. I got caught getting loaded in my room. And you can't use drugs and stuff over there and drink on the state hospital grounds. They just have a problem with that. And I remember when me and my friend got caught and they kicked us out, Kirk Cottrell, he told me, he said, "Oh man, this is just another phase in life that you just got to deal with. Don't worry about it. And let's go get some weed." And we went and got some weed. And I always use that as my little mantra for getting caught drunk somewhere. "Oh, this is another phase," you know. And finally, I went down to phase none down on 5th and San Julian. I phased out and went on over there. And I phased into that program, living on the goddamn streets, selling me, my brother's clothing, and anything I could get my hands on to get loaded. And that's when I think it really started bothering me a little bit. I mean, before living on Skid Row, I could always, like, find somewhere to hide behind some Al-Anon that's going to take care of me or help me or fix me or do everything but address the real problem. I can't stop getting drunk, you know. And I adjusted to living on Skid Row. I'm here to share that if you're new, in no way am I trying to do a little scared straight thing on you. When you make it down there, you'll learn how to do it. If you really want to stay drunk and continue to ignore the solution, you'll be able to make it on Skid Row. Trust me, until you die. And so I'm not trying to scare anybody into staying sober, because I don't want to live on Skid Row. If you be real alcoholic, you will make the adjustment. And that's what I did. And I love the adjustment. It took a little while to get used to. I often tell the story about the first time that I went down there and I got off the back of that RTD bus and fell back off the bus, and I felt like that white lady in that movie, The Sound of Music, twirling around on the hill. And it was a beautiful experience for me. I enjoyed Skid Row. There was nobody down there really like holding me accountable, you know? And you could just wander around and walk around and stay drunk all day. And nobody was telling you, you need to go to school or you need to get a job. People were like, what do you want to do to get loaded? Okay, we're going to go over here. And it was sort of like a research project on who could get loaded the fastest and the most oftenest, all the timest, you know? I loved living down there. And then one night I was down there and it was really cold, and they have these trash cans that they set on fire and they burn stuff at night. And so you stand around and you sort of, it's almost like voodoo, I guess, but you stand around and you sort of talk about what you're going to do to get what you need to do. And I learned how to do that down on Skid Row, how to talk up getting loaded. And that's why I warn my friends about conversation and sobriety, how powerful that is. Because we would just talk up getting high. And the next thing you know, somebody would come up on something. And then we would just be loaded, man. And all we did was just talked about it at first. See, a lot of that happening in AA nowadays. Staying stuck in the drunkalogue. And what happened for me is I basically got ran out of that community. And every community that I would go and try to hibernate and feed this disease with, I got ran out of it. You know, because my disease progresses to a point where the people around me can't tolerate it. Because I'm sucking all the resources out of the goddamn environment they've allowed me to live in. I don't know if anybody in here can relate to that. And then I wound up going back over and visiting my goddaughter in Watts, this girl that I went to school with. She let me be her daughter's godfather, and I remember going to visit her, and two of my friends saw me, and they hadn't seen me in a while. And they were happy to see me, you know. And they beat my ass because I had stolen some money from them. And they chased me out of there. And I wound up falling down on the ground in front of this this building called the Westminster Foundation, which is a little place where you do like theater therapy and children's workshops. And I had been involved in that community-based program for a long time, growing up in Watts. And the director of the program came out and saw me laying on the ground, bleeding, because my friend had thrown a hammer at the back of my head after I started running, after he hit me in the hand with that hammer. And I was just laying on the ground, and she scraped me up and took me to Big General Hospital. And they patched me up and put me in a cast. They gave me some Demerol. And something told me, man, there's got to be a way you can do this again, you know, to get that buzz, to get that head change. And I remember leaving that hospital and going over to my aunt's house. She told me that I could no longer live in her home anymore because I had become just a nuisance and just a pain in the ass. And so she threw me out. But she told me I could still sleep in the garage on the floor, and that's what I proceeded to do. And I lived back there in that garage, and incidentally, it was thought that my brother had a son by her child, but we found out that that was not true just about 3 years ago, and it devastated me. But I don't want to go there. I'm chasing rabbits. Anyway, my nephew, I still consider him my nephew today, my nephew saw me sleeping back there, and other times I would nap in an abandoned car back there. And I heard him ask his mother one night, why is Uncle Dee Dee sleeping in that car? You know, and I started crying, and that really fucked me up. You know, people want to know why I'm so fanatical about AA. Little stuff like that. And I remember getting up one morning and trying to get some food from her. And she told me that I needed to go down to Big General Hospital and find out if they have some sort of a program or a place where I could go. And I went down there and I went to this little like public services department within the hospital. And this little old lady is in there and she told me, "We have nothing here for you. You know, you have your little brace thing that you got from our other county facility. You got a little free shot of Demerol when you were down there. And there's really nothing we can do for you, sir." But she said, "Go down about a mile away from here to this little place called El Centro, which is a little referral, like, drug addict, alcoholic place," whatever the hell it was, you know. It looked like a little drug store, you know, like in one of those weird movies or something, you know. And I remember going in there, and I walked all the way down there with my little cane, and I met this little Mexican guy in there named Ronnie Macias. And Ronnie Macias sat me down and told me that I didn't have anything to show for the life that I had been living. I was 24 years old. I was already living on Skid Row, and I wasn't going to make it. And I believed him. And nobody had ever really said it like that, or I'd never heard it like that. But for some reason, that hit me right in the stomach when he said that. And he said, "I'll be right back." And he went to get what I found out later was these little bus pass things, because he put me in a hotel room for 7 days on 7th and Vermont. And he made me catch the bus from his office to that hotel every day while he looked for me a program to go into. And that day when he left me in that cubicle, I got on my knees and I asked God to help me, because I didn't know what to do. And I meant that prayer, you know. And I didn't give a real long-winded, you know, prayer. It was just, "God, please help me," because I knew I was really in trouble. And on the last day of living in that hotel, he put me in. He told me to go down to the Volunteers of America building and make a phone call to a place called Warm Springs Rehabilitation Center. And I went into that little lobby of that building, and I made that phone call. And there was a lady on the phone named Yolanda. And she told me that I had to have 7 days sober in order to come to Warm Springs. And before going in there to make that phone call, I had found a little roach on the ground in front of the building. A roach is a marijuana joint, part of a, you know, we in an AA meeting and people get all nervous about marijuana, you know. And yeah, I smoked a little weed and went in there to start my recovery. And I told her that I did not have no 7 days, so we were going to have to push this back a little bit, and I'll get back with her and really start the process on a clean slate. You know, when I look good enough, I'll do it. When I look good enough, I'll get started. When I arrange my outsides to where it looks like I don't even really kind of even need this shit, then I'll give you a call. And she told me to get on the van anyway. Now that kind of fucked me up a little bit. But I went ahead and got on the van, and I've been sober ever since, you know, so far. So I guess I better spend the rest of the time talking about recovery, if you don't mind. And what happened after I got on that van is my life changed. And I got involved with those people on that hill that were involved in changing who they were. And I just became a brown-nosing, sucked up. You know, I just sucked up. I asked questions, and I got involved, because for some strange reason, from the time I left that building to the time we went up that road up to Warm Springs, I thought for a second that maybe this would help me. Just maybe. And maybe I don't have to continue to live on Skid Row and pretend as though that I don't need help anymore. You know, maybe I can finally look my mother in the eye and not wonder if she think I'm high. Maybe. And I just went on up there, man, and they voted me in after several months being there as the AA Steering Committee Chairman. And I don't really know how you can get that position without taking the steps, but I did it, baby. And I was up there, man, and I became in charge of AA. Straight out. If we're going to do AA, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it. And don't ask me about the steps because I haven't taken them, but we're gonna do AA. And I just got involved, man, and I got motivated like I did for how I got high, because I figured that if I didn't get involved, then I really wasn't going to be involved. And it's kind of like that little thing they tell in AA meetings, like a breakfast, where you got the ham and the eggs, and the fucking chicken makes a contribution, but the pig makes a complete and total sacrifice. And that's what I had to do, you know, because I know a lot of people come here to contribute. And tell us what we need to probably change around here. In other words, metaphorically, just laying eggs all over the fucking place. But the people who benefit me the most in Alcoholics Anonymous are the men and women who choose to make a sacrifice, who arrange their lives so that AA is all that really matters in order to get those other caveats of living. And those are the men and women that I've gravitated toward to help me stay here. The men and women who sacrifice in order to do AA. And you may not think that those people are here. A lot of them probably don't even know how to talk as well as I think I can. But there are men and women here in this program, in this society, that know that without AA, they don't get nothing. You know, and so they live like that. They live as though that if they don't have AA, they don't get shit. You know, and those are the people that have kept me from killing my fool self, even after being sober for a little while. I go and I find those men and women who, no matter what, are committed to living and doing and not drinking around AA. You know, and those are men and women who primarily have taken our steps. And they've decided to take other people through the steps because they realize that that's the whole meaning behind the steps, is to get other people through them. Because I'm already taken care of for the most part. I mean, in spite of the problems that I create pretty much on a daily basis, I know that my higher power keeps me sober. And I know that I don't have to leave here to learn anything. You know, that I can make all my mistakes here now in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't come up with that idea. An old timer taught me that. Somebody that had been sober for a while taught me that I don't have to leave AA in order to learn anything about not drinking. You know, and when I got to Lancaster, which is where I moved to after I left Warm Springs, that's where I met my sponsor at the Open Door Fellowship Hall of Alcoholics Anonymous, just sort of a high entry-level group. There wasn't a lot of puff and fluff. People came in there smelling like shit, feeling like shit, and talking a whole bunch of shit. And there were men and women in there like a triage situation that were helping folk recover. Not only from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but from the dishonesty that takes us back there one more time, even after having time sober. They were basically in there brainwashing people. And as filthy as my brain was when I got here, I needed it. I needed that extra cycle. You know, on the washing machine, I got an extra one. An extra cycle. I needed that, you know, metaphorically. I really did. And because my life before accepting a lot of this stuff was just about, like, you know what, there's no reason to live and try to do what these people are doing around me. I'm outnumbered anyway. I don't attach and connect and just blossom like people do in society. I don't feel right about it. It doesn't seem like it's working half the time. So why even bother? Does anybody have any beer, for God's sake? These people want you to really adjust to things that I just don't really connect to. I'd much rather be drunk. And so it's not a moral thing here that keeps me sober, even though I've learned a couple of morals. I think what keeps me sober is just this spiritual thing that I can't control, but I just am willing to be a connected part of it now. I want that connection. You know, and when he took me through the steps, he changed my life. You know, he didn't just tell me to read this bullshit with him and then go and make friends. He was an intrusive, assertive, pain in the ass. And I needed that because my head automatically sets me up to get loaded again. It doesn't set me up to have people in my life constantly confronting me with my own bullshit. I don't naturally gravitate toward those people. Don't be telling me shit about me. Look at you. What about your mama? You know, shit. Don't tell me about me. And he didn't care, man. And I didn't intimidate him. And he scared the shit out of me. It wasn't that I felt that he would, like, beat me up or anything physically. But I just felt that by the time I started telling him all these secrets and stuff, that, you know, he had the he was properly armed with facts about me at that point. So there was no way for me to go, I was just bullshit. That's all right. No. I was just playing. Psych! You know. No, he knew that I was fucking psycho. And that I was going to wind up getting loaded again. And he treated me like this shit could kill me. He treated me like I had no guarantee other than the fact that if I didn't drink, I didn't get drunk. That's the way he behaved toward me. And it was really uncomfortable, you know, really uncomfortable. But for some reason, all that stuff he used to tell me just makes sense a little bit more now. Not all of it. I still haven't gotten over that one thing he used to say. I was sharing about the other day. There's something spiritual about having a job. I don't know why he still says that. He's got a 20 years old. And I don't know why he say that yet. You know, I like my job today, this one. I've had it for a little while now. Sometimes I see the spirituality in it. He claims it's supposed to be there all the time. And I'm not there yet. Maybe when I get 20 years sober, I'll probably understand that a little more. But anyway, I got through the steps with him. And in that group, those people just like raised me up in the group, man. And they let me go to their business meetings. And then they let me listen to them argue about how much coffee should we put in the thing. And how, you know, we would argue about that because that was important. And we would make issue about 2 scoops or 3. Shit. We gotta iron this out tonight. Nobody leaves until we find out how much coffee's going in that thing, you know. And we would argue about some of the stupidest shit. I mean, we had me and my friend Pat Rodriguez. She's been sober a million years. We put on this 12-step seminar where we would study 3 steps per weekend, and we started a damn war at the group because they didn't want to cancel the meetings. They didn't want to do it. Finally, they approved it. And then the last issue left was, should we buy balloons or not? And I told Pat, I said, Pat, we got them. They're going to let us do the steps. And we're fighting to do steps in AA. We're going to do the steps. But lay off the balloon shit. Because we got it. And she said, no, we shall have balloons, you know. And that went on for about a month. And finally, we got the balloons and we did the seminar. And it was a beautiful thing. We did 3 steps a weekend. And I remember putting that on, and I had about like 4 years sober. That whole thing changed my life, man. Because what we did is we invited speakers from all over the area to share about each step, you know. And we did it as a fundraiser for our group. And man, you know what? Listening to all those different people just changed my attitude toward being trapped in the fucking open door. You know, because I started realizing that I was a part of AA, that I wasn't just part of a group. And so I do a lot of nomad meeting type stuff. I travel around to different meetings. Because I don't know about you, but when I was getting loaded, I knew where to go to get shit. And you could drop me off in the middle of the fucking desert. And we would either dig to go get a drink or something, but we were going to, and that's, I like to be able to do that. I like to be able to go places and just go to a meeting wherever I'm at. We've gone to San Francisco now 3 times this year, and we go to this little club out there, the Marina Dock. And we know where that meeting is, we know where to go, they have great meetings there, and it's surrounded by bars. and you can hear the people hollering and shit. Hey! You know, and then, come get loaded! Come on! You know, and we're in the meeting doing AA, visiting out of the area doing AA, man. And it's a beautiful thing. Here comes the mushy part for those of you that aren't going to stay. What I have found here is that there's no reason to leave, especially to be drunk. I mean, sometimes we may get depressed, or we may get confused, or we may have gambling or sexual issues and stuff. We may need therapy and all of that. But as far as leaving to be sober and to practice total abstinence, there's no reason for me to leave AA for that. You know. And it's a beautiful thing, man, to not have to be wandering around trying to figure out, how the fuck am I going to stay sober tonight? Or do I really want to stay sober anyway? You know, that the psychic change has happened for me. And on a lot of days, it's kind of boring. You know, on a lot of days, it's not exciting. On a lot of days, it's not like I've drank 17 energy drinks and I jump up out of the bed and go, yippee, where's my higher power? You know, it don't feel like that all the time. You know, a lot of times it feels kind of like I have been sober for 16 years and I don't have shit to show for it. There's some emptiness there that kind of just follows me around wherever I go. And so what my higher power does is he just puts newcomers in there to plug up those holes, metaphorically. I believe that if you're sitting in this meeting tonight with time sober and you got a lot of problems and you're not feeling good about your sobriety, you're not connected to enough new people. They will keep you preoccupied with their bullshit until you go to sleep. And your problems will be solved by lack of attention when you're working with these other people saving your life. And people be asking me all the time, how many people do you sponsor? And I say, I don't know. How many people do you sponsor? They say, well, I don't really sponsor anybody. And I said, well, that's how come I'm sponsoring so many goddamn people. You know. And they walk away mad at me. They go tell people I'm an asshole. And I am. I really am. I know what I sound like if you don't sound like this about AA. Because I've been there. You know, I have not had the fire all the time, man. You know, and the people that annoyed me the most were the people that were doing most of the AA. I couldn't stand those people, man. They just seemed like they were fanatics. And my grand sponsor said that they used to call him a fanatic. And he said that his sponsor told him good because fanatics don't usually get drunk. You know? So in other words, it's like when I left that rehab and I moved into that community and those men and women started teaching me how to do AA at the group level, I was interested. And like the big book says, I had to be because I was hopeless. Hopeless people tend to turn an eye toward this stuff. People who have yet not found no answer show a little bit of interest in this yet because they don't really have a lot of other stuff going for them in regards to not drinking. So what I try to do basically is just stay involved as much as I can. You know, and I know to other people it may look like I'm trying to be on a pedestal or something, but the bottom line is my alcoholism is very acute. You know? My alcoholism is very, very alive and well. You know, and on any given day I know that I'm subject to fall victim to a mental blank spot. So what I try to do is a lot of preemptive stuff. And I just try to be in a safe place because I don't know when it's going to happen. You know, the book doesn't tell me exactly when it's going to happen. And that mental blank spot, it can come in a lot of ways, man. It could tell me, you know what, I don't need to go to that meeting. I've already worked the steps. You know, I've heard what he has to say. You know? And I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm tired. Shit, I got to go to work. My 12 and 12 tells me that I'll hide bad motives behind good intentions. I'm furthering my life. I'm moving on. I read a book. I'm different. I'm floating above my fellows precariously, as I'm improving my education. And the next thing you know, I don't even... It's like, how long have you been sober? I don't even keep track anymore. I am not of this earth. I'm spiritual. Why are you looking at me like, you know? sort of, and it's funny, but I've had friends do that. I've had friends do that. We'd be up all night talking about the traditions and what we're going to do with the meeting, you know, how we're going to help this new guy. And then a week and a half later, they're on the phone saying, do you really have to go to that many meetings? And this is a meeting that you helped me start. You helped me start the goddamn meeting. And now you don't even really feel the need for it. That's how weird this alcoholism is, man. So I'm still a little uncomfortable with being an alcoholic. You know, I'm still not safe in a lot of ways. And so I call my friends and I ask them and I tell them, are you with me? Are you helping me? Do you remember? You know? Because something could happen, you know, you never know, man. I mean, a lot more people, more spiritual than me, ahead of me on the ninth step, were drunk. They go get loaded. So I guess the hope for me is like not just figuring out why people go out or why I haven't gone out or are we going to all go get drunk? Hey, bring in the beer, Charlie, you know. Instead of doing all of that, what I like to do, man, is try to find that newcomer that doesn't really understand what the fuck is going on around here. The tricky ones are the ones who've been here, think they understand, and left and came back. But I'm talking about, because every once in a while you get an anomaly around here, and there is a new guy or gal that comes in that they've never been to AA before. They've never tried it. They don't know what it's like, man. And I love trying to find those kind of newcomers. Because you don't have to deal with so much ego in regards to the fact that they may or may not know something about AA. I like starting from scratch. You know, and what happens with those new people is they really, you know, they really see the light, you know, because they've never been here before. And it's like there's something, you know, it's like when you smoke the same weed all week and then you build up a tolerance for it. You got to get some stronger shit because that shit starts feeling like bunk. You know, that's the kind of things I see with people that run in and out of here a lot. The things that captivated me in 1991, just people just get a limp, you know, they don't even worry about it. It's like, oh, man, I heard that shit before, man. Okay, what new shit do you got? And I'm here to share that in this book, they claim that there's a lot of shit that they won't change. If you knew and you keep running in and out of here waiting for us to change something for you, if it's got anything to do with the first 164 pages of this book, like you not drinking again, they're not going to change it. They're warning us. They done made four editions of this fucker. And they are not changing that shit for you. So you're probably going to have to make some changes toward it. One thing, I'll read it, and then I'll shut up. I know everybody's eager to get out there and go help these newcomers. Right? Be in a hurry to get out of the meeting. I'm on my way to Iraq. Hurry up! Go to the meeting. Shit, you know. And in the big book, in these personal stories, they used to talk to each other for hours. They wouldn't be able to stay sober nowadays. We'd be in a hurry, boy. Shit. Man, I done had 9 energy drinks. You think I'm going to sit here and listen to your ass? You know. And they would talk all the way up until the night. By the time Bill and them got done talking to you, you'd be too damn sleepy to go get drunk. They're talking for 5, 6, 7 hours. You know, but now we got to get it done in 3 to 5 minutes or somebody's going to kill our ass. We got to go build our lives and be productive members. We're going to live life on life's terms. There's a scary one. That's all this bullshit got started for me. Going out there and doing life the way I thought they wanted me to do it. I had no idea that it would be safer to live life based on spiritual principles, like the book tells me. And I think clinically they've sort of put that little spin in it. Not only can you be altruistic, but you could be all about taking care of yourself too. And I just think that's a bunch of horse shit. You know, I'm committed because you guys are. I have found people that are committed because I am. And it goes back and forth. It's a two-way street. That's why we don't have no president around here. We feed off of each other. Of myself, I am nothing. My Father doeth the works. AA don't mean a lot to a lot of people. Don't mean a lot to a lot of people. People have found a dry date. Their lives have changed. They done fell in love with somebody. They got the money all saved up. And all they want us to do is to leave them the hell alone so they can enjoy their sobriety. And that's not the program of recovery that's outlined in this book. So that is not AA. Getting it together for yourself so you can be by yourself to yourself. It's not AA. So anyway, I don't know why. Boy, that really frustrated me, didn't it? This is the little part right here that I love so much. And I read it a lot because I get discouraged. You know, I don't have a lot of friends with 16 years sober that I came in with. They got too many years and they forgot about the days they were in when they got here. They get well. I've looked up the word well in the dictionary and I don't see my little black face next to none of the definitions. Well. A little picture of me. Done. You know. Page 15 in the big book says that we commence to make many fast friends. You get friends real fast around here. You know? There's people in this meeting right here tonight that know more about me than my own mother. Okay, so we get these fast friends and a fellowship has grown up amongst us. There's a lot of people that we go around to the meetings when people hate us. You guys are taking all the seats. Instead of, look at all these people that are not dying anymore. It says that they grow up amongst us, which is supposed to be a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in a path that really goes somewhere. Have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted. Feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums. You know. Now the way an asylum is described in this book is kind of like where I got sober. In a rehabilitation center. With doors that close really tight and shit. We come out of there. We don't remain institutionalized. People who are doing AA. Come out of those institutions or those asylums, and what they do is they resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome amongst us. And that's why people don't like AA. Right there. Because every time I would take him a problem, he would talk to me about a fucking newcomer. And my mind was like, what in the hell does that have to do with me writing these bad checks at my damn job? I done wrote 3 bad checks. They're going to fire me, man. I have told you the truth now. I am no longer hiding the secret. I have let it out to you. And the only thing that you got to ask me about is, what happened to that guy you were reading with? Where did he go? And I didn't understand why he would do that to me like that. I'm important. I am bringing this issue to you. I am stealing from my job. Will you please help me with something more than the importance of a newcomer? Why are the new people so important? I figured it out. I like movies. I think newcomers are important because God hid the solution in the problem. It's kind of like the Indiana Jones movie. You know, you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. You don't know which thing to touch, what button to push, what lever to... Yeah. And he hid it in the newcomer. That's where the answer is. It is not in me. I've been sober for 16 years. If I can't find gratitude for that, that's my fault. The newcomer. It's the new people. That's where the fucking answer is at. And we walk by them all the time, man. We be out at the meeting, and we see our friend that we've been talking to all goddamn week on the phone. And we walk right by the guy or gal that's really alone, that really has trouble. Not the guys and the gals that know where we are, and they know where to sit, and they know when we're going to clap. Not those people. I'm talking about the guys and gals that you see on the break that aren't talking to nobody. That's where the answer is if you got problems here tonight. You know? It's not in holding your sponsor hostage trying to be healed. It's in the newcomer. And I believe that when newcomers really feel that you're about that, they will come to you. But if you're not really about that, it's really hard for them to probably feel it. Most of us come here pretty fucking numb. You know, I have to check my motives today, and it's really difficult because I got these goddamn character defects that follow me everywhere, you know. And every time I ask my higher power to get rid of them, all he does is help me get tired of them. He's a sneaky little guy. My higher power is real sneaky. He's very aware of my bullshit, you know. I tell you, and I'll be quiet. We got a new thing at work now. I have to do the PROAC training every year now. PROAC is a technique that you use to work with people in certain parts of our community out there where you got to be ready for action in case they try to kick your ass. And they told me when I first got the job that I was only going to have to do it once and I would be certified. If anybody try to kick my ass, they better watch it. The training allows them to do it, and you really don't feel it all that much, or whatever, you know. And now I got to go every year, which I really don't have a problem with because they pay me and it's a lot of hours. The problem is I got to learn how to shut up during the training and let the instructor train the people because I already know it, you know. So I got to keep, you know how when people are talking and you're mouthing along with them and doing all this shit and touching stuff and waving at your friend you haven't seen. I have to behave as if that, you know, I need to learn more too. Yeah. And I don't want to act like that. I've been going through, this is the third time I've done this training. Shit. But then I start thinking about the people that haven't done it at all. And they deserve to hear the shit that I had to hear in order to learn it. And I'm trying to practice that in my everyday life, and it's hard, man, in meetings and stuff. Fucking around with people and stuff during the meeting. Denying those next to me who have not heard this stuff for the first time to actually hear it. And that's embarrassing. But it's the truth, man. I got to look at that. I don't want to look at that shit. I was looking at my sponsor during a meeting last Tuesday, and he led the meeting. And right after he led the meeting, you know, he was sitting there looking and watching and listening to other people. And he whispered every once in a while to the chair of the meeting. But for the most part, my sponsor pays attention during the meeting. And I had to look at that in my 10th step. And I don't want to look at that. And so I just want to put some human out there for you. That your speaker tonight has an acute case of alcoholism. Now, I still have to ask God to remove character defects and shortcomings that stand in the way of my usefulness to him and my fellows. You know? And I have a meeting with my sponsor in a week and a half, and we got to go over some inventory. And I don't like doing inventory with my sponsor. I believe people that are enjoying the ninth step are looking at it on the wrong side of the street. I don't enjoy the ninth step at all. Only part I like about the ninth step is that it connects me to the rest of the steps in order to help you through the steps. But sitting around just waiting and doing the men's, I don't like it. Because I already know that I'm the one that caused that damage. And it's embarrassing, man. Hurting people and knowing that you hurt them. What's so exciting about getting that done? Hear people in the meetings bragging about step nine. I did a ninth step today. You know, the reason why I share that I've done step nine is those things, is so that you can do it. It's not so I can take credit for what God is changing in me. You know, and that's how I have to look at the program. I don't want to be my own higher power. You know. Anyway, I've had a really good time here. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're sober tonight and you really believe in the fact that not drinking is going to help you, that's cool. But that's not a cure for alcoholism. I mean, it even sounds noble. I'm going to stay sober to benefit humanity. No, I'm going to stay sober because I'm connected to AA. And I'm going to stay sober because God wants me sober. And today, tonight, I'm staying sober because I believe I'm in His will. And His will for me is to not drink tonight. So if you're a newcomer, I hope you find that will to get involved with His will or your higher power's will for you. It's kind of like those movies like when somebody dies and they leave a will behind and they read it to you and you get these little goodies and shit. If you do certain things, that's the metaphor I use to try to stay with my higher power. That if I cooperate and fall in line, what will happen for me is I'll get to see that He is taking care of all the stuff. And the willingness and the work that I have to cooperate with is the fact that I need humility because I want to take credit, man. I want the pat on the back. Shit. Working with those damn kids and getting spit on and getting socked. They're going to PROAC training. I want credit for that. You know, and I don't deserve it, man, and I don't get the credit. You know, the credit goes to Alcoholics Anonymous. The credit goes to my sponsor, my original sponsor, and the sponsor that I'm working with today. They deserve the recognition. And since they got to work the same spiritual program, they put it all back in the pot, man. And we give the glory to our higher power so the newcomers will have a resource when they get here instead of our goddamn personalities. They'll have something to draw from besides my schedule or what conveniences me. They'll have something beyond that to reach for so they can stay sober. If you're new, I hope you get to another meeting as soon as possible. Thanks for letting me share.